Hi, it's Diane. Great to be back with you for our Tuesday podcast. On my mind, the security of our voting systems. In 2016, we learned how vulnerable the country's election infrastructure is to foreign hacking, and that countries like Russia are actively trying to interfere. So, as we approach 2020, have states made the necessary changes to protect how we vote? The answer, says election security expert Alex Holderman, is no. He's a professor at the University of Michigan. He joined me from Ann Arbor on Monday morning. You're joining me from Michigan, but last week I gather you had a message for Congress. You were here in Washington. Tell us what that message was.
I was testifying to the House Appropriations Committee about progress so far in securing election cybersecurity across the country. My message to them is, well, we're making some progress, but it's going way too slowly. And states need more resources in order to be ready for 2020.
So remind us of the kinds of attacks that our infrastructure, election infrastructure, faced in both 2016 and 2018.
In 2016, we had an unprecedented spectrum of attacks against the entire election system, really. We had attacks against political campaigns where email was stolen and made public. We had attacks on social media that were trying to sow discord and amplify certain fringe views. And most alarming to me, we had attacks against the infrastructure that runs elections, computer systems at states that are responsible for voter registration and other functions. Now, in the 2 years or 2.5 years since those attacks happened, we've learned a lot about what took place. We now know that Russian attackers infiltrated or targeted voter registration systems in 18 states.
Wow.
And in some of those states, they actually had the ability to alter or destroy the registration data. Had that happened, well, it would have been chaos on election day. Maybe millions of people across those vulnerable states would have showed up to vote and only to be told they weren't on the lists. The amazing thing, though, is we know Russia didn't pull the trigger. It's not that any technology was stopping them. It's that they decided not to pull the trigger on that branch of their attacks against the election. So what I worry about is that we're still very much in a position where it's not technology protecting us. It's whether it's in the interests of our adversaries to exploit that technology.
Well, now we're looking forward to 2020, and a number of jurisdictions have replaced their old equipment with what has been hailed as a safer kind of voting machine. Tell us about this and why this machine needs more investigation.
There are many states across the country, about 13 states, in fact, that still have machines without any kind of paper trail whatsoever. And this creates a tremendous vulnerability because over the last decade, I and other computer scientists have found many ways that attackers could even remotely infiltrate these paperless machines and potentially even change election results. The solution to that is to make sure that every vote is recorded on a paper ballot that voters can see and review, and that officials can come back to later and spot check to make sure the computer results are correct. But the problem with that is that some states, in going and replacing their paperless machines, are looking at new machines that, although they have paper, we aren't quite sure whether voters are going to be able to know that that paper is right. So this is what brings us to the so-called ballot marking devices. Ballot marking devices originally were introduced to help voters with accessibility needs complete hand-marked paper ballots without the assistance of another person.
Yes.
So if you're blind, if you have difficulty using a pen to mark your ballot, you can use a touch screen and just pick your choices on the screen and it will print out a filled-in ballot for you. That was the original intent. But today, many states, as they're looking to replace their legacy voting machines, and in fact, it's most of the country that will need to replace its voting machines soon. I think it's 43 states are using election equipment that's no longer even being manufactured. But some of those states are looking at introducing these touchscreen ballot marking devices for all voters, not just voters with some special need. Now, this is a problem because we haven't had science done yet. Nobody has gone and studied these new machines to see whether they're as safe as having voters mark ballots themselves, whether they're effective at preventing cyber attacks.
But how is it then that a number of jurisdictions are already buying these machines and putting them in place?
It turns out there are no strong national standards for the security of voting machines. We have standards that are more than a decade out of date that don't really ask the questions that come up when you're having machines fill out paper ballots for voters. That the key questions are, if there's something wrong with the machine, say someone has hacked into these ballot marking devices and causes them to just some of the time print out a different candidate than the one the voter meant to vote for, are voters actually going to notice? How often are they going to notice? I've talked to many people who vote in jurisdictions with ballot marking devices today who didn't even remember that there was a piece of paper that they had an opportunity to review before it was voted.
To check.
To check.
Yeah.
To just make sure the machine printed who you tried to vote for and not who some attacker misprogrammed it to vote for. But unless enough voters are able to notice and correct errors, and you correct the error just by telling the officials you want to spoil that ballot and vote a new one, unless most voters do notice those errors, then in a close election, an attack on the ballot marking devices might be able to change enough ballots to change the election result and get away with it.
But even short of that, or even beyond that, apparently, what you're and many other voting machine experts are worried about is that the barcode itself could be modified without the voter knowing it, and that he or she would read out a printed ballot that shows exactly what they voted for, but the barcode itself could change that vote without the voter knowing it.
Yes. So one issue with many ballot marking devices is that they will print out both a human-readable list of who you selected on the ballot, but also a barcode. And the barcode encodes those same choices. It's supposed to, anyway, encode those same choices. And that's what actually gets counted when you take the printout and put it into a scanner or a ballot box.
It's the barcode that gets counted.
It's the barcode that gets counted. So how do we know that the barcode matches what voters intended to vote and matches what's human readable? Now, there's a solution to that. And the solution is that in all cases after elections, whether there's a barcode or not, in all cases, election officials should be auditing the paper ballots to a very high level of confidence. And they don't have to go and recount all of them by hand, but they have to basically take a statistical sample, like taking a poll of the ballots, and look at enough of them to know within a very small margin of error that the election result is correct. It hasn't been altered by any kind of fraud in the computers. Now, if when election officials do an audit, they're checking the human-readable part of the ballot and not looking at the barcodes and relying on them, then we can be very confident that the barcodes weren't changing the result. There's only one problem, which is that today, very, very few states require an audit that would be rigorous enough to detect that kind of fraud in a close election. So states need not only to make sure that there's a paper ballot that the voter is reviewing and making sure is correct, they also need to be auditing those paper ballots to high confidence.
I gather it's impossible for a human being to read the barcode.
At least very difficult, not by yourself. You could, in theory, use an app on your phone or something like that. But in some states, the law says you're not allowed to use a phone to take a picture of your ballot for privacy and secrecy reasons. That issue, the barcode issue, is symbolic of a greater problem, which is we need to have rigorous audits after every significant election. We shouldn't be waiting until there are accusations of fraud floating around. We should just be, as a matter of course, basing our elections on evidence, right? So I think that voters, whoever they are, if they're rationally skeptical about the outcome of the election, it should be the job of the election system to prove that the result was right, by demonstrating evidence that the right procedures were carried out, that physical evidence like the paper ballots was inspected and audited, and in a way that's transparent to the public.
So how concerned are you that a number of jurisdictions are already putting these machines into place without completely testing and without the promise of the checking of the paper ballot?
I think we're doing things in the wrong order here. We urgently need more research, more rigorous standards, and rules that say audits need to be in place after every significant election. And if we don't do that, we're taking a new risk. The risk is that we're only going to find out after these machines are bought and paid for that they're not able to solve the security problem, which was the original reason for buying them in the first place. So it could lead to states spending money that just isn't being used effectively, and we'll be right back where we started. But the bottom line is we don't know, and the science has to be done. I and other researchers are starting to do work now to try to better assess the human factors, the usability of voting machines. But it's urgent, and unfortunately, it's being held back in part because the voting machine manufacturers are just not being forthcoming with making their equipment available for this kind of urgent scientific testing.
How come? I mean, shouldn't that be a demand?
I think states should demand it, absolutely. I think that the policy should be that equipment has to be demonstrated to be safe and effective before it can be used in elections. We're just crazy to wait until after equipment is purchased for hundreds of millions of dollars before anyone goes and uses science to say, is this safe?
And now a quick break. When we come back, more from Alex Holderman.
DCS Daily.
DCS Daily.
DCS Daily.
It's news,
culture, and curiosities.
From the District, Tacoma Park,
Alexandria,
Friendship Heights,
Hyattsville,
Falls Church,
Northeast Washington, D.C., in your inbox every weekday afternoon.
DCS Daily. Sign up at dcs.com/newsletter.
dcs.com/newsletter.
And we're back. Here's the rest of my conversation with Alex Holderman. He's professor of computer science and engineering at the University of Michigan. So should we even be using electronic voting machines? Are paper ballots simply more reliable and secure?
hand-marked paper ballots are not just the most secure, they're also the most cost-effective way of implementing an election. And I think until new technology beyond that is shown to be safe and effective, states should be relying primarily on hand-marked paper ballots. Of course, you also need machines available to assist the disabled. And we're not talking about old-fashioned paper ballots that are going to be counted by a few people together in a room. Modern paper ballots are ones that are read by scanning them into a device, usually one right in front of the voter in the polling place. That provides an additional layer of security as long as election officials are going and doing what's called a risk-limiting audit to make sure that the computers are correct by going back and manually inspecting enough of the physical pieces of paper.
Thus far, we've talked about the voting process itself. What about the registration process?
So voter registration was, of course, the most prominent area of election infrastructure attacked in 2016, and it remains a source of notable vulnerability because voter registration systems in most states are connected to the internet. They're at a highly visible location on the internet so that voters can come in and update their records. And they're absolutely critical to get right, because if your voter registration system is compromised, that could be used to cause chaos on election day, possibly even partisan chaos if voter registration records of voters registered with a particular party or in locations that favor a particular party were singled out and targeted to have their records manipulated. But I think there's some hope with voter registration because in some ways it's an easier problem to get right than securing the polling place. It's just an online database. And with other kinds of online databases, your banking system, your email system, we are able to secure them to an adequately high level using existing security practices. The problem is that many states are just so far behind the current state of the art in security. They've been underinvesting in election systems for a decade or more. So there's been a lot of catch-up work for states to do since 2016. Many of them have been prioritizing upgrades to their voter registration systems, but we're still finding important new vulnerabilities. One example of that was Georgia right before the 2016 general election.
I must say, I also worry about the idea of educating voters as to exactly what the process is. For example, what happened in North Carolina.
So I think that educating voters is going to have to be a central component of any approach to securing elections, because voters have an important role to play in watching out for anything that's wrong or suspicious, whether that's people, as in North Carolina, who are committing fraud with absentee ballots, or whether it's you as a voter in a polling place taking the time and care to check a printed ballot, if that's what your community uses, to make sure that it's been printed correctly. So voters and educating voters, much more needs to be done.
So tell me what the responsibility of each state is versus the responsibility that belongs to the Congress.
So states under our federal system have the primary responsibility for the operation, conduct, and regulation of elections. Traditionally, the federal government has had a very limited role. They've been involved in certain voter protection issues, in accessibility, but their role in cybersecurity for elections has been very, very small. 2016 has changed a lot of this. So 2016 demonstrated that today we're living in a very dangerous world when it comes to cybersecurity. States and local governments that administer elections found themselves on the front lines of international cyber warfare.
Yeah.
And I don't think that there's any other context in which we ask the states to, by themselves, defend against hostile attacks from foreign governments. This is a totally appropriate place for Congress to step in the name of providing for the common defense and give states resources to better protect themselves. And that can be assistance from DHS and the intelligence community, but I think it should also include funding for the necessary upgrades to polling place technology and election office technology to implement new security protections.
And how much do you think that would cost?
The cost could vary a lot depending on whether states want to use their money most effectively for systems like hand-marked paper ballots, or whether they want to purchase ballot marking devices, which, as we talked about in the beginning, are not only carry new risks, but they're also about three times the cost, the initial outlay, as implementing a system of optical scan paper ballots. But I think if states apply an efficient means, like hand-marked paper ballots, then it would be about $370 million to eliminate the last of the systems from the country that don't have a paper ballot for every vote. There are about 20 states that need to replace some of their equipment to get us to a paper ballot for every single vote. Now, depending on how that money is distributed, it could end up that even more funding is needed. But really, in the scheme of what we spend on cybersecurity protections, this is a tiny drop in the bucket.
And we're now how many months away from an election, and you've got many, many Democrats running for president against the current sitting president. How many of them are getting into this issue and talking about election security?
So you have seen several of the Democratic presidential candidates already make election security a focus. But it's not only the Democrats. Even the president has come out and said, both as a candidate and since taking office, that paper ballots are the way to go in order to ensure that we have secure elections. We just need more national leadership and national resources to prioritize this problem. And frankly, there are so many major cybersecurity problems that we face as a nation, protecting the power grid, protecting the financial system, protecting individual privacy. And for most of those problems, as a computer scientist, I'm going to tell you, well, give me billions of dollars and decades of research, and maybe we can make things a little bit better. But election security is not that kind of problem. Election security is a problem we can solve. We can make it so that every voter can have confidence that the outcome is right, and we can demonstrate to them why that is.
But, you know, I worry that increasing numbers of voters or potential voters don't believe in the safety of the system and thereby simply don't want to vote.
So I worry about that too, and I wish we could tell every voter that the system has been well secured. But even until that's true, even while there are still risks, everyone should still go and vote, because if you don't vote, you just guarantee that your vote isn't going to be counted.
Do you think that politicians could capitalize on this whole concern about the safety of the voting system?
I worry not just about politicians capitalizing it. I worry about foreign governments like Russia just using the fact that our election system isn't yet adequately secured to undermine confidence in the whole system. It's one of the basic functions of government, Diane, to make sure that we have elections that everyone can believe in. And unfortunately, we're not there yet. But I think with greater investment, greater national leadership, we can get there. And we can get there by 2020 if we act really fast now.
So ahead of the 2020 elections, what would you really like to see happen?
I want to see the 20 states that still don't have a paper ballot for every vote replace the machines so that we've got that in place. And I'd like to see states urgently, as a matter of national security, prioritize auditing those paper ballots to high confidence. If you're not going to go back and look at the paper ballots, they're not serving their function yet. We need audits, we need paper, and we need to just be prioritizing election cybersecurity throughout the system. Now, we're starting to get much greater awareness among state and local governments that election cybersecurity is something they need to be concerned about. But government moves slowly, and without greater federal coordination and standards and resources, I think it's going to be a long time until especially the most weakly protected states get up to the level we need them to be at in order to ensure the whole nation is well protected.
So what kind of reaction did you get when you testified before Congress about this?
I think that there are many people in Congress on both sides of the aisle, frankly, and in both chambers that want to make election security a priority. On the other hand, it's difficult for them because there's both a tradition that this should be the responsibility of the states. And so the federal government stepping in and even imposing minimal standards, some people worry that that's going to be stepping on the toes of the states. I think it's actually quite appropriate to have minimum standards that states can meet or exceed. But unfortunately, also, elections are just so naturally wrapped up in politics. And so I think that's why it's so important to step back and look at this. It's not a political or partisan issue. Nobody, Republican or Democrat, wants election results to be decided by hackers.
So is this keeping you up at night?
Unfortunately, and it's really unbelievable. I've worked in election security for almost a decade and a half now, and I'm still learning new things every month or so about election practice on the ground that give me new reason for pause. At the same time, I'm an optimist, and I think because of the specific shape of the problem of securing elections, because of the urgency of doing so, I think this is one of the problems that we can and will solve as a nation. And we're going to have Republicans and Democrats come together in order to do that. But this is an urgent matter of national defense. So I still have hope that that's going to happen.
Well, I hope your hopes are realized. Professor Haldeman, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure. It's great to talk to you, Diane.
Thank you. And that's all for today. I'd love to hear what's on your mind. Find us on Facebook and Twitter, or send us an email, drpodcast@wamu.org. You can find all our podcasts and even old Diane Rehm shows at dianerehm.org. Our theme music is by Jim Brunberg and Bent Landsberg of Wonderly. This show is produced by Rebecca Kaufman and Allison Brody. Our engineers this week are Douglas Bell and Natalie Yurev-Lipker. Thanks for listening. We'll be back with you on Friday. I'm Diane Rehm.